Friends, family, neighbors, you are here with your hosts, Madison Ray.
That guy Ray.
And Daniel B. Picasso.
And of course, our special guest today, Mr. Dan Umpthin.
Hey!
Welcome. You're watching strictly for my neighbors. And let's just get into it.
Let's do it.
How y'all doing? It's been a minute.
Yeah, been a while. Life is good. Got some changes coming up. The neighbors are taking the show on the road.
That's right.
Next week.
Hey.
We're
That's right
for that. Nice. Yeah, going to Colorado. Maybe we'll do a show at Red Rocks. Fuck it. We'll just run up on stage and do it.
River Deep Mountain High.
Forgiveness, not permission, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, right. Let them kick us out. That's good content. That is good content. But of course, we're here to talk about our guest, Dan, today.
Yeah.
Tell us about what you do. What do you do here in Des Moines? And where your career has been so far?
I wear a lot of dumb hats. Like 15 years ago, started out doing an open mic or two over at Billy Joe's Picture Show.
Oh!
It was on the 22nd.
Billy Joe's, shout out.
And there was like one open mic, comedy open mic specifically, roughly a month at the time. And a couple of buddies and I started one at House of Bricks.
Oh, another throwback.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And that lasted at House of Bricks through 2014 when they closed, when we moved it over to Lefty's.
Okay.
And so we've had one of the longest consecutively running stand-up only open mics in the country.
Dude, congratulations.
That is
amazing.
That's amazing.
There's a lot of them. Like, I know of people who have hosted an open mic. Like, there's one person in New York that I know of that's been doing it for like 20 years consecutively. Mm-hmm. The same weekly open mic, and there's somebody in Colorado, I think in Denver, that it has been running for like 15 years. But I'm like, Alex and I are now some of the longest, so it's very crazy to do that. We put on showcases for a long time. I really slowed down with that on COVID, but that's ramping up now. We got regular shows monthly over at Peachtree Brewing, in their Des Moines branch over in the East Village, which is great, and some big things in the work. You know what? So this is gonna come out. When is this gonna actually drop?
Like in a couple days.
Yeah. All right, that's rad. So if this comes out before Wednesday, you need to come out to the show. It's a free show, 7 p.m. Wednesday the 6th at Peachtree Brewing. It's the day after Perry Thompson's birthday.
Nice.
So I'm gonna gas up my guy here. So he's headlining. I'm really pumped about that. But the crew that's on there is great. The next month, May the 4th, we're doing a Star Wars celebration.
Oh, shit, that's going to be amazing.
So there's like 10 comics that are all going to dress up in character.
Okay.
Like, I finally ordered the costume that I need. I'm gonna do Obi-Wan.
Of course. So, yeah. No, of course.
It works.
Yeah. That beard.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey.
Like,
oh,
I know that.
Yeah. And the new show's gonna be dropping.
I know. It's gonna be timed perfectly.
Get those tie-ins, man.
Disney, cut the check.
But let's back it up a little bit. How'd you get into stand-up comedy? Like creating a space and doing the work for, you know, creating the open mic thing is amazing. But how do we even get to the point of like you getting on stage
and being like,
I can entertain these people?
Yeah, I want to build on that too. Like, what made you take that jump? Because I personally think I'm hilarious, but I don't know if that would translate well to stand up. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think any creative process is a willingness to fail at something or without the fear of that failure.
Yeah.
And sometimes that takes a push. And the push that I got was a really good friend of mine named Ben Hauk was running the student activities at the M Shop up in Ames around the time that I started, like 2006. And we were out downtown, like, and there was a sign at 4th Street that's had a stand-up comedy contest for like $200. And it was like you got to perform for 5 minutes. And this was around the time that Ben was like, "Hey, you're funny. Can you put together 30 minutes of something that you can do?"
Oh, like, what the hell? Like,
it's a whole pilot episode.
Yes.
I thought we was at 5.
5.
Precisely. I'm glad that you both recognize how ridiculous this is, because that is a ridiculous ask.
Yeah.
But it is also the kind of ridiculous ask that somebody who has never done stand-up comedy is like, of course course I'm funny. Of course I can do 30 minutes the first time I do comedy, and it will be blistering. And it was not at all, because there was a guy who was professional, and still is professional. He lives in Dubuque now, lived in Des Moines, Greg Althoff, and it was great. He did an hour there, but I did like a half hour of paint, just like, just weird premises of just where I had the idea of, like, even then I was like, we need prison reform of the prison system in this country. Instead, we just wall off Montana and everybody gets, like, you get a sponsor logo tattooed on you if you want, and you just fight. And, like, whoever wins, they get released and they get $1 million. Like, stupid ideas.
Surviving the game. Yeah.
Escape from Montana.
Like, wait a minute. This is a movie premise, but this is like four movies at once.
I guarantee you could sell this to Netflix.
This would be like one of the best trilogies ever.
It would be ridiculous.
You'd shit on Squid Games.
There was so many, well, oh god.
And you know Kanye's the final boss, right?
Oh shit.
He could just do it on his land. He could be like the overseer.
Exactly.
You know, he just owns the entire. Oh no.
So then you take like two states, so you got like Montana and then you got Wyoming, so you go. Exactly.
You start flying about between the two. You could just take western Iowa and like northern Nebraska, right? Because that's where, like, Montana's beautiful. There's nothing there.
It's true.
Not in the northern Nebraska and western Iowa, you can take that. That's fine. You can take take that land back. I'm not even gonna say that. That's
no,
crazy.
Now you need to say it. What the? Don't do that.
This is a problematic safe
space. No, you let that land be run. The Western United States, we need to let Native Americans need to have autonomous, non-federal control over a massive amount of land. It
Amen.
Needs to be given back.
Amen.
Period. Ended. When the Supreme Court made it sound like Oklahoma was going to go back as literally legally Native American land without federal oversight, I was stoked. Mm-hmm. But like, if you had this situation where they were just like, look, we're going to give you a bunch of white criminals for you to do whatever you want with. The idea to me is very funny, where it's just like, guess what? You can make them fight, do whatever. No, I don't know. Not
Hunger
that's
Games.
That's what I was like.
You're doing the Hunger Games,
this.
Dan. Yeah. You're doing the Hunger Games.
We are. We're talking about the Hunger Games.
Yeah. Dude, we are not on the cusp of. We are like balls deep in a dystopia. Do we really want to start like having free zones where just shit can just go? That's how you work with a purge meets a Hunger Games meets a slip and slide. Like, I don't even know.
The entire point is that the initial premises that I came up with to do 30 minutes were the hackiest, stupidest thing possibly existed. There was no improving on them, is the entire point. So I was just like, I gotta prep for this 30 minutes, so I'll do this 5-minute stand-up comedy contest. And if you ever want to get into stand-up, mm-hmm. the greatest thing that you can do early on is the worst thing that you can ever do in stand-up, which is a comedy contest. Mm. I've run them. But this is the worst part about them is it forces people who are participating mm-hmm. and people who are watching to presume that this art that's entirely subjective, it's stand-up comedy is an art, but it's a low art, but it is an art, mm-hmm. presume that this is this subjective thing that everybody's going to have very different tastes in is somehow all equal. It would be like if there was a battle of the bands and you had jazz, punk, country, and hip-hop all at the same time, and then variations in between, and you had to pick just one style that won the night. Mm-hmm. And it's like, imagine you had like something that was somehow a deviation from like whatever that regular style is that you can't define, like a Sturgill Simpson,
yeah.
and they win over everything else. That doesn't mean that Sturgill Simpson country is better than jazz. Anyway, yeah. big digression here. They're terrible for
yeah.
art.
Yeah,
and
oh, absolutely.
But they make new comics especially do one of two things. If you win and you're a new comic, it goes to your head. Then you go out and you start trying to like do the biggest thing you can, thinking you're amazing, and you fail hugely,
yeah.
and you get humbled.
Nice.
Or if you lose, you learn the greater lesson. You learn that there's no winning in this. There's only collaboration, and you start doing it for your art, or you get sad and you give up. And a lot of people get sad and give up that are mm-hmm. very talented and shouldn't.
Oh. God damn, that sounds like a parallel with music. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's all arts, really. Ooh, like, you know, there's
competition. Yeah, it's an interesting. You're right. It's an interesting dynamic that exists where there's this talk of how competition brings out the best and da 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 da, which has its truisms, but there's also this kind really of. Yeah, there is this damaging side of what competition does, especially creating a presumption of objectivity when it is impossible to actually find that in a creative space. Like,
yeah,
how it do turns you navigate art into that?
Sport, yeah, is what it does,
right?
Like,
yeah,
and in sport, you know, like as much as millennials, elder millennials, younger millennials get talked about as like the participation trophy era,
yeah,
there are still winners and losers. And when yeah. you turn art into competition like that, like that's what you're stuck with is winners and losers. So, you know, do you have the resiliency to keep going? Like,
yeah, you gotta have a love for the game.
Yeah,
and there is. You know what I mean, there's no natural. There's no natural competition in art.
Yeah.
Mm. But like art is what makes human culture human culture.
Hmm.
Because no other living creature has the ability to make art in and of itself that we're aware of. They might, we don't know. Dolphins may have poetry and we're just not with it, right?
Bad right. dolphin poetry slap no.
They have dolphin open mics. We just don't know it.
Yeah, like, we don't
anytime
know.
They dip a mic in the water and they're picking up dolphin noises.
This could be my big break, Carl.
Like, all right.
We've just been hearing dolphin yo mama jokes like on National Geographic for years. Like,
wow.
Coming next to the stage, it's.
Oh, shit.
But it's not, I mean, like every art, the reason I got into stand-up is my friend Ben Houck, but also, like, specifically Eugene Merman,
mm-hmm.
Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, Louis Ramey, Chris Rock, George Carlin. I have to say Louis C.K., although I'm very disappointed in the dude.
Mm-hmm.
Maria Bamford, I mean, Zach Galifianakis. And
yeah,
so there's all, and that's what I think art is you see something that someone created and you're like, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do it that way. And then eventually, after a while, you're like, I like what they were doing, but I could do this way. And that's where you actually come into your own is where you start. You're done in your imitation phase, which every art has, and then you start doing something as unique as you can. So. And it's been good because I think, you know, when I got started with this, there was not a whole lot happening stand-up comedy-wise. There was not a whole lot happening in Des Moines circa 2006, 2007 anyway.
Huh.
Yeah. There's a lot happening in town now with a lot of good stuff in multiple arts, which is great to see. But it's been fun to build it. You know, we had a monthly showcase for the longest time and did have stand-up comedy contests, which I will never run another one again.
You heard it here first, folks.
Never roast, again.
Never again. Never again.
Roast battles are fun, but roast battles are only fun if it's comics that know each other and most of the audience knows the people who are roasting each other.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, I do want to do a Des Moines mini celebrity roast battle. That would be very interesting.
Oh, that'd be amazing. And no one would come back from that.
It would ruin whole crew.
Yeah, so literally, like the city would be in flames after that. But I would definitely need a front row ticket to see
that. Yeah, I'm having popcorn and snacks for that one.
I'm heckling. I'm not a heckler, but I'm heckling that show.
Oh, dead ass.
Jackie Schmillen, are you gonna let them talk to you that way, girl?
I want to roast Rob Sand.
Just give me 5 minutes on stage for Kim Reynolds bits.
Like. Oh,
that's how I want to start my
Kim
comedy career.
Kim wouldn't do it, but that would be choice number one.
Oh, Rob Sand would be roast chill about it. Joni like, Ernst too.
What about Brad Zahn? Do you think he'd show up? Do you think he's got enough arrogance that he would?
What about the
he's
smoke?
Too busy having a red face. Like he's got.
Yeah.
Have you seen the dude? Like he's popped enough blood vessels in his face from excessive alcohol consumption and carrying guns on planes when he's not supposed to.
Damn.
Tell the truth.
Just spill all the tea.
Tell the truth.
It's common.
No, actually, that brings up a really great point that was actually your question about, like, being in a red state. Like, you know, you are one of the wokest dudes I know, like, in a genuine way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is... Yeah, being a leftist vegan in the reddest
the
Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, so there's
a
how do you navigate this?
That.
Yeah.
There's a big, big transition to that.
Talk us through
because
it.
Because that is not who I was at all times. So I do want to clarify something. There was a period where I was vegan, which is where you use nothing that causes animal suffering or that is a byproduct of animal anything.
Right.
I don't wear leather as much as I can. I don't buy new leather. I still have old leather that I still rock every once in a while, shoes and such that I bought previously. But generally, I still do. I still mess with dairy.
Mm-hmm.
But I am meatless. I have some theories on veganism, which I'm happy to get into, that it's impossible to have for anybody to actually be fully vegan in a capitalist state, because it,
okay,
by definition, capitalism requires the exploitation of human labor, therefore causing human suffering. And if human beings are a classification animal, then you couldn't ever be vegan by using anything whatsoever.
Yeah.
If it's like, and I'm not even just talking about like for-profit prisons. I'm talking about like just people who are underpaid.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
First stop.
The girl who was real slow getting my coffee because she was making banana toast. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Exploitation of human labor.
Right. Oh. She's like, I'm sorry, sir. I have to make this banana toast.
Maybe I should give her some grace.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't even.
Damn.
That's deep.
These days, the last 2 years, like with service industry anything, I'm pretty chill about service industry anything now, but especially these last 2 years, like shout out this new Capriati's thing. They have an Impossible Burger chicken or Impossible Burger cheesesteak, which is pretty good.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
If you're eating, like, if you want to make a pretty easy meatless switch, like, you can go to Impossible or Beyond Burger pretty easily, because if you're going to, let's be honest, like, if you're getting burgers from McDonald's or wherever,
mm-hmm.
that's probably only 40% beef anyway.
Right, right.
But you also don't, you can switch that out pretty easily. But, like, Capriati's, it's very good. I'm not kidding. Like, it took forever to get the sandwich, and I was actually at the point where, like, 15 minutes in, I was just like, I'm actually a little miffed, and I have lost patience at this point. I'm not going to say anything, because these are kids who are working for, like, there are places around town that have signs where it's just like, oh, for people in high school, we pay this lower wage, and for everybody else, we pay this higher wage. Fuck that. You're doing the same work.
Yeah.
Paying the same amount of money. I don't care what you're, no.
Working the same amount of hours.
Right. Mm.
Sometimes more, which exactly. is crazy.
Yeah.
So start taking care of these kids, you dirty fuckers. But
amen.
I just don't get mad at people who are like, if you're doing something like and you're working for like hourly wages or something, unless I have sent you an invoice for something, I can't get mad at you for the work that you're doing. That's my position.
Yeah.
If it's a situation where an invoice enters into the mix, then we can have an actual discussion that may or may not get heated. But if it's a situation where our interface is only 5 to 10 minutes
yeah.
of me waiting on you to make something, I'm just going to maintain my patience,
yeah.
be cool. And if I really didn't like it, I just don't have to come back. I don't have to be mad about any of this.
Right.
Perfect. True.
Right.
My biggest fear is to turn... That's why...
Bro, you're such an adult.
Well, look, this is...
you know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't want
damn,
to cross for that.
Look at you, fucking grown up.
here's the other half of this is like, I don't want to... For that same reason, I don't want to freak people out. Like, I'm slowly losing my hair, right? It's getting more rapid over the last 2 years because of the stress. But I also don't want to turn around and, like, shave my head, because usually bald white guy with a beard is, like, red flag number one.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, this guy's got something that he's going to get mad about.
Right.
Does he have a NASCAR logo anywhere on him? Oh, no. It's time to get...
Check his
all Leonard Skinner all the time.
Like, yeah, where's the backward flag? Or like, no,
you got a
I don't
blue
know.
Line about the back of the neck.
Right. Right.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. The Blue Lives Matter tattoo on your neck.
Oh. It's like a blue line. It's like a blue line forever. Like, yeah.
I mean, if you wonder why, like, critical thinking skills are at their absolute, like, whatever the inverse of an acme is, like, they're at their absolute bottom, because anybody with reasonable critical thinking skills that looks at somebody creating Blue Lives Matter as a clear response to people just saying, could you stop shooting us?
Mm-hmm.
Could you just stop that? That's the lowest bar that's possible. And then the response is just like, guess what? We actually like these people who are wearing a uniform more. Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what you're going to go with?
Mm-hmm.
That you can see it transparently.
We still want them to shoot your ass.
Right. Basically. I'm cheering for the other team, actually.
Yeah. We still want them to shoot you.
That was my transition, because I was raised in a very conservative, evangelical Christian home.
Ooh.
And the problem with that is, here's how my parents goofed up. And they did, like, I love both of my mom and dad, but they goofed up in letting me read the actual words of Jesus Christ.
Yo, that's the realest thing ever. That's so real.
I wasn't ready for that.
Yo.
Okay.
Because, whoops, I actually took that to heart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you... There was a point where like
oops, I was, good Christian, my bad.
Wow. Through college during the Iraq War, I was like, I don't really like what we're doing. George Bush is fine, I guess. He's not really fine, but he's like, you know what? I don't think John Kerry would do it better. And then finally, I think the point that like really shifted everything for me was. You know, you get in these conservative circles, at least at the time and now, that, you know, there's this whole idea that, you know, you should have the Second Amendment available to you because you don't want the government to come in and tell you what to do and try and attack you. And so you should be able to have a gun to defend yourself from the government is generally the idea.
Right.
And then Trayvon Martin was murdered.
Mm.
And he defended himself with his fists.
Mm.
And that somehow wasn't okay to the same people who are like, you need to have an automatic rifle to combat the government that you supposedly support and the flag that you kneel for, and all. But this guy can't just say, I want to live the rest of my life, and you aren't even a cop, and you have no right to stop me. And if the roles were reversed...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you know, exactly.
And that's... That was the point where like the critical thinking caught it, like really caught up, and it was like when in Futurama where Bender has like the little like cascade logic failure where it's just like this actually doesn't work. Like the more I think about it, the more I'm just like I don't think Jesus would be good with any of this actually, like the entire, and the more you examine it. Mm. You know, one of my favorite comic book writers yesterday on Twitter was talking about how everything in the modern Christian church in America, the mainstream Christian church, especially evangelical Christianity, is the opposite of what Jesus Christ stood for in every way.
Wow. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the simple thing was, you know, that I saw that things that I believed... that I was accepting as true without taking in any kind of critical thinking were hurting people that I was friends with, was hurting people that in the abstract I did not know but knew had no right to be oppressed or hurt in any way. And that was kind of the cascading failure. There was a point where, you know, I started thinking about the consumption of meat, and for that same reason I was just like, I can't know that this... creature doesn't have any deeper life or thought process than I do, and I don't know that I need to contribute necessarily to any of that.
Dude. Wow. I started seeing these things about like pigs playing video games. In our group chats, we talked about this, and it really kind of messed me up, like, to put things in those terms of like, yo, like I could be playing Smash Bros with the thing I get my bacon from, you know, like which really like gave me serious pause.
I mean, if you're a
to
person,
really like.
Pigs are smarter than cats.
Right.
Pigs are smarter than most other primates.
Yeah.
Other than humans. And it's just like
6-year-old kid.
I have a problem with that because ribs are amazing.
Yeah.
And it was not a thing where it was just like very easy to just be like, I need to change my entire lifestyle and I want to do this because I don't think I'm better than anybody else. And I think that's one of the things that like it's like annoys people about like vegans or vegetarians, because there are people who are just kind of like, oh, you still do that?
Yeah.
Like, that's you live in the mainstream culture is just like, you know, sausage for breakfast, bacon for breakfast, you know,
especially in an agricultural state.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you're brought up like to where the, you know, the almighty pig and cow and chicken,
you got a farmer's breakfast,
especially in this state.
Yeah.
if you besmirch the name of the other white meat, like, you might as well call it a day and wrap it up, because we have a bacon fest here every
Dead
year.
Ass. Yeah.
You know, like, and people celebrate like it's the goddamn Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know?
It's Midwestern Mardi Gras.
Yeah,
and you literally get sold out tickets to this motherfucker.
Oh, for sure.
For some chocolate covered bacon.
We need a bit to process that one. Thank you. I'm glad you know. I'll show you some titties for a slice of bacon.
A slice of bacon. It's candied?
Get them out.
Bring them out.
Drop them out.
So, I mean, to build on that, how have these epiphanies really affected your career here specifically?
Like, I don't think it's hurt. It hasn't necessarily hurt comedy for me, because this is something that, like, I think the short-term goal that I really set for myself was to build a space in comedy where myself and people like me had the opportunity to do as much comedy as they wanted, to get very good, and from there either make a living from here with it if they wanted to, or move to wherever they needed to take their next step. And we're there, very much so,
yes.
I think, at this point. And there's a lot of people that have done both of those things. There is some degree to which, once you start working at professional clubs, where you recognize that there's requirements to kind of adjust material, especially if it can be a little bit antagonistic. You can slip some stuff in there if you want to, but generally, if you're in a regular three-person show at a professional club, you're going to have the host, a feature, maybe a guest spot, and the headliner doing 45. As a host, your job is just to get the crowd into a condition where they are comfortable laughing. Eat the first few minutes of silence, if that's what it's going to be, but really set the pace of the entire show, get people amped enough for the next two acts that they're enjoying themselves, and really just make sure that you're facilitating the entire flow of the show. And you can't do that. You can't try and be a George Carlin in that position. You can't really challenge anybody's beliefs, because then what you're asking, regardless of what direction or perspective you're taking, if you close down a portion of your audience, you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
Which is
facts.
Why I have some nuanced opinions on some of the other salient comedy subjects happening right now, especially with the Chris Rock, Will Smith, and we can let that go. But if your job in that position is just to get people flowing and people happy, and you know, whether I say something blatantly misogynistic that turns off every woman in the room, I've failed at my job. Or if I say something that's perfectly true and absolutely accurate, but very upsetting to middle-aged white guys, I've also unfortunately failed to do my job. It's not my job to challenge them. My job is just to get them into the space of laughing. So there are a lot of jokes that I have changed that, if you see me at the Funny Bone, are entirely different than what you would see me do at, for example, Teehee's or Lefty's or at Peachtree or any other venue that does comedy in town.
Yeah.
That's a very, very different set, for sure.
Of course.
But there's some stuff that I like to slip in there where, like, I just give... I let people...
We all like to poke the bear.
Right. Yeah, just you gotta yak him a little something.
Just to see how fast you can run. I mean, literally. You just gotta poke it one time just to see how fast you can run. Because sometimes you can run away with some shit.
That's true.
You can run away with some shit.
You are right. You live to fight another day. Speaking on that, like, I want to talk a little bit more about, like, your craft specifically, as you're now, you know, getting out of the space of the emulation of your heroes, but now you're crafting your own voice, your own perspective, and your own material.
Yeah.
So what is the style of what is your Shaolin technique, sir? How do you put down?
Oh boy,
the art of comedy.
So from just a pure writing process, I like to write out premises first. So let's just jump into the notebook, right? So it used to be like a
exclusive.
Right? A held, this used to be like a longhand, like actual written notebook that I carried with me, and I'm considering going back to that because I really enjoy that. Because you can make changes a little bit more easily and see the progression of your process instead of just like the edits that you have cut out and stuff that you've lost, and you can turn pages a little more easily.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are some gems in the margins that you don't even realize when you're like scribbling a thing out that like, oh, there was something good there. Yeah, when you're just deleting some shit, like it's just like it's gone.
I'll do the same thing with visual arts. Yeah, like doodles and shit, I'll be like, oh man, I should really build on that versus like doing some shit on the iPad and I'm like, ah, oh,
it's gone.
Fuck, what'd I do?
Where you're like, I don't know what else. Actually, I don't even know what I did with that.
Gone forever.
Like, right.
There's some stuff that I like to write stuff out longhand because similar to we talked about emulation. One of the things that I really like about a lot of comedians, one of my favorite traits is either writing a really elegantly crafted, very short, sharp joke where the like every single syllable is really well crafted. But I also like Patton Oswalt style verbosity, where it's just like you've got like all of this like very comically complex language to describe and deconstruct something that's inherently ridiculous. I love both of those directions. So the wording and word economy is really important, and that's why I write everything out really longhand, because it's effectively prose that you're just speaking. It intersects with poetry, which is the first, you know, maybe second human art, right?
Yeah.
But let's see here. What do I have that I wrote? No, that was, I did this on stage at Lefty's. I had written something very serious and was like, oh, that's right, that's actually not a joke. I was talking about the huge cosmic sweeping feelings that our ancestors had looking up at the dark, the fear of what the dark was and how deep it was and what that meant, because I was looking at the sky on like a clear night, and I was just like, man, imagine not knowing what was out there and just looking at that and looking at an infinite void. But then I
how high were you?
I was
right. That's just not funny at all.
It is funny. That's some deep introspective, like 2 a.m. type shit. Right. You're like, I need to go to bed.
I had this. I had this bit that I was like, oh, that's right. I wanted to try and do this bit, and I transitioned into it. It's a bit about synesthesia. That like
okay.
It, the person that came, and I've never been able to make this work. This is part of the craft and the process that's fun, is having an idea that's like, I want to say something about this, but there isn't anything, I'm not getting there quite yet, right? And I like the idea that the person that invented just the letter M, right, had to have had synesthesia, and they didn't know what it was. They didn't know what to call it. They were just like, this actually has this shape, and he's just drawing an M in the air. They're like, no, this sound has this shape. And somebody else was like, bro, no, that is exactly how it's shaped. And they're both probably high on, like, you know, mescaline or something. They were just up in the mountains eating some plant. They were like, all right, we're really messed up, but that does have the same shape. And then they went down, they were like, no, but check it out. And then they drew an M, and everyone was like, you're onto something. And they just...
what does this look like to you?
Now you guys are on the joke.
Yeah.
There. See?
Collaboration.
That's
takes
where
a village, right? Art is collaboration. Here we are.
And everyone agreed that 15,000 years later, we've like lost that person completely. And they're one of the most important people in human history, and nobody remembers them.
Dead ass.
And that's
right.
That's one of the wild. So
shout out Grug.
Yeah, shout out to him.
But then,
truly a wordsmith.
Then it's just other dumb stuff sometimes, where it's just like I started sleeping with a weighted blanket. Over the pandemic. It's been 4 months, but it's still won't let me kiss it on the mouth. It's just dumb. Just dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Where like you find the word economy and stuff. Like I was out with Zach Peterson in Omaha, and there was a touring comic that was with us, and I don't remember who it was, but he said something about the how the hotel that they had just checked into was garbage. And I was like, oh, you ordered a sweet, but you got a sour. And I just, like, that's just a fun little quip that I've thrown
that's
in.
That's borderline dad joke.
Yeah, that's prime dad joke territory.
Right, it's almost there. But that's what it is just vascillating between, like, high verbosity and, like, really sharp jokes. And I like incorporating, everybody likes incorporating elements of pop culture in, but I also like sneaking in some of the subtle. I don't have a problem with the term wokeness. I do have a problem with the fact that the right has very much tried to co-opt it and make it sound like it's something that's dangerous. When it's just like, when it's literally just like, you understand that all it means is that you're aware of the fact that every aspect of the system that we have is designed to exploit every aspect of our entire lives and monetize it for somebody else's benefit, and we're not getting anything out of it. Mm-hmm. That's what woke means. If you wanted us to say it longhand, we can do that.
Yeah.
But you've just decided to call it the woke liberal mob. Like the
buzzwords.
The liberal mob is just like Nancy Pelosi, like doddering around and just golf clapping occasionally.
Wearing kente cloth on for photo ops.
And not doing anything else.
Straight mobbing.
Uh-huh.
Didn't they take a knee too?
Yeah, sure did. Yeah,
in the kente
cloth. In the cloth, the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, shit, why didn't you just wear a Kaepernick shirt and then put it in kente cloth and then take the fucking knee?
That's too aggressive.
Yeah.
That's way too aggressive.
That's too aggressive.
Whoa.
That actually would
have
meant
their
something.
Own constituents.
right.
They could have just not voted to... to allocate any additional federal funds for police until this reform. That was literally the lowest bar, and they couldn't do that. Mm. So, I don't know.
But kneeling's so much more fun, Dan. What are you talking about?
Plus, I gotta wear cool costumes.
Not the costumes!
Yeah. And I got a couple of drums in my room in the quietness, you know, when nobody's there. I can...
I like to imagine
Lion King soundtrack on repeat.
So woke. Deadass.
Chuck Schumer like leaned over probably when he took the knee and just like put one hand on the ground and he just whispered to himself, "Superhero landing." Like thought he looked so cool.
What a great segue. You found this nice niche of where
weird
pop
nerdery.
Culture and your own nerd tastes and your stand-up comedy lives have all intersected. How did we get there? How do you make that bold leap? Because I know we're close in age, and when we were coming up, like being a nerd would get your ass whipped. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we had to whisper about X-Men and Dragon Ball Z and all that kind of stuff.
True.
Because like
we found each other through nerddom.
Yeah, like legit. Like there was that time when it was still like that thing where it's like, yeah, you can't openly talk about this.
Nope.
But now you're making a career on it. Like
I've got this fun YouTube channel called the Doomcast.
Shout Doomcast! Yes, I love the Doomcast so much.
It's some weird stuff, and once a week I'm doing something that's very different than a lot of comic book channels. A lot of comic book YouTube channels are going to spend 15 minutes to an hour regurgitating an entire storyline that you can read. I'm not interested in doing that because you should probably just go read it if it's good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other YouTube channels that do like a very quick like rote breakdown of things. What I like doing with the Doomcast, since I started doing it for Kurt and Kyle over at Capes Cafe.
Oh yeah,
and
that's
so,
right.
They were just like this was really generous, but there was a point where like I was friends with both Kurt and Kyle, and Kurt was like, "Look, I had just gotten laid off from a job," and he was like, "Look, if you want," he's like, "I will pay you essentially in comics once a week if you make a commercial for Capes." That's just comic centric, at least 5 minutes, whatever. And I was like,
"That's a hell of a deal."
As a comic
collector, that's a hell of a deal.
Yeah. It truly was.
Yeah.
Because it's not that comics are certainly not cheap. But that's really how it started. And some of it was like lampooning a lot of stuff. And then I really early realized, I was like, I know exactly what I want this to be. I want this to be like Alton Brown had a show about comics.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, I see that.
It's the breakdown of like the history, the both like the inside baseball, how it got made, some of the historical, political context, social context. Like, I think I like going into not just why a character was created, but how they changed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
and the reasons that that character's changed and some of the implications there. Like, I think some of my favorite episodes off the top of my head. There's one that I did about the Punisher and guns and the fact that Jerry Conway,
the creator of
Punisher, was just explicitly is just like, Marvel can't copyright the skull because it's just a skull. I can't copyright the skull because it's just a skull. But if police officers could just stop using this as a thing, because you're the opposite of what the Punisher
Frank
is.
Frank Castle would kill you, bro.
Right. Or like when you see guns with like the Batman logo emblazoned on, you're like,
that's not how this works.
You have never seen a Batman in your life, have you? No. Like, what?
That's wild. One of my other favorite episodes is like right around the time that Trump was trying to close the border. I went and did a history of Superman, where I was just like, Superman was created by two Jewish immigrants, and they based Metropolis around a city in Canada, not in the United States. And it was about it was a metaphor for the story of Moses from the Torah. And it was about a guy who was an immigrant to Earth, an illegal alien who became an investigative journalist that used to hang, muckrakers out of their windows and people who were, awful steel mill owners. Lex Luthor this isn't something that he morphed into. Lex Luthor was always Jeff Bezos.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
From, 1938, yep. Right?
Superman's first villain was a corrupt senator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was his first big adventure was punching a senator in the mouth for being a sack of shit.
Yep,
and that was it. It was like, got him. Yeah. Roll credits.
And that's the thing that I love is you. There's this whole cottage industry of people who are farming likes and views and everything on the internet of about comics culture, comics gators who are just railing against SJWs in comics and how comics have suddenly gone woke. I'm unfortunately the one to have to tell you that they have been woke since 1938.
Day one.
Superman punching senators, Cat punching Hitler. They've had it.
Yeah.
Since the beginning.
From the jump.
I mean, that's why 1954, Seduction of the Innocent, that whole book created a panic in Congress, and they were all like, oh, we got to regulate this because this is turning the kids into, they're waking up, they're getting woke. Mm-hmm. And they're just,
Bunch of gay communists.
And now we have the Commerce Authority.
That's exactly where it came from. It's crazy. And it lasted until the 90s, until Marvel was just like, kids love chains and blood.
Turns out. And pouches.
Pouches all over.
So many pouches. Too many pouches.
There's a lot of pouches, and nobody could draw feet.
That is an insult to Will Sportacio because he,
fair
point. There's a lot of people who in that time period. That's so weird. Herb Trimpe was one of the greatest comic book artists of all time, and made the attempt to try and transition to a Liefeld, or I don't know why I pronounced it that way, Rob Liefeld style, or Mark Silvestri style, a very hyper realistic, super detailed style.
Yeah.
And it didn't work for him, but his old school stuff, he did the cover of Hulk 181, the first Wolverine, and it's kind of this not blocky, but it's just these rounded lines. And it's a very cartoon-esque style. And it was really fun. And then he changed in the 90s just to try and fit in and keep getting work.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, had a corner on the market. They were doing basically everything along with...
That's capitalism in action. Supply and demand. Yeah. This is the style that they want to see. So, can you step up and meet the moment and deliver what our audience wants to buy? Because, there is a time when, the hyper-realism, supplants the cartoony, more of that, what do you want to say, kind of iconic or symbolic space where, to break down that art of, when you have photorealism, you're telling a very specific story about these people, which is a very, adult perspective to have, which I think, someone like Mark Millar has made, his bank on, casting actual actors in his comic books. If you go back to Wanted and you see Eminem in the lead role there, or even his take on the Avengers, where he famously made Sam Jackson his Nick Fury, which now we have Sam Jackson is Nick Fury. You know, versus finding the more abstract space of like, this could be you, this could be me, I can be Peter Parker or Miles Morales, because of the lack of detail in that more abstract space. You know, it's just a difference of taste and timing, but also I think the audience, because like, I think there is a space where, and I hope we're reclaiming that, just creatively, that there's more in that space for imagination.
Right.
Because in that hyper-realistic style, it always feels too limiting. Like, I don't care how many zippers Captain America has on his, you know, flak jacket, armor, whatever, it's made of this material. Like,
fuck the pouches.
No, right, it's just bulletproof. Right, it's just bulletproof. Right. I can accept that on the term of just, tell me it's bulletproof, and I go, okay, it eats the bullets up. We good. Next point, you know. You know, well. On one hand, I appreciate the art of the detail. Like, where is the space to just go, no, he flies, because that's what he does. He flies. You don't need this weird roundabout version of physics that allows, like, dads to understand, oh, that's why he flies, because he actually just walks. He power walks real fast, and it looks like flying.
That's sort of the frustration that I have with Marvel in general, is that it's created so much spectacle that it's taken the imagination out of a lot of things, but it's good for kids because it's getting them into comics. And I do still watch everything Marvel, but I feel like, you know, now I'm watching it with a much more critical eye. But I am glad that there's a big movement in comics, really. Like, there's always reactions in art to any movement in art, and then there's a counter reaction, and that's how art works. So we're kind of coming full circle in our discussion anyway.
Yeah.
But it's awesome that, you know, after the 90s with the hyper-realistic style, it paved the way for people like Darwin Cook and, you know, Chris Samnee and Greg Smallwood and Sanford Green, and then like outsider art styles like Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent, and like all of these artists that have like a more comic booky style. Daniel Warren Johnson's like one of my favorites. Like, consistently, I love that.
You turned me onto him on Instagram, and he's legit one of my favorite people to follow. And it's remarkable because he also knows that his style will never be mainstream. Like,
but it's got such a following. But they let him do a whole ass Beta Ray Bill 6-issue run where they were just like, go ahead, write and draw it, do whatever you want. And they just gave him a blank check, and he went and did it.
Yeah.
And it rules. Because, like, I think that's maybe the big takeaway here, is that if you have something that you want to do in any form of art, if you know, this is the way I want to do it, this is how I want to do it, this is where I want to do it, these are the terms upon which I want to do it, and you continue, you know, like my buddy Alex Carter, who owns Black Cat Ice Cream, he's like, you tell the universe, this is the hill I'm going to die on, and I'm more than willing to die for this.
Mm-hmm.
You may well die, but you have to be prepared for that, but you will probably succeed. Is the thing.
The universe will help you out. Put it out there.
If you're coming at it with the best of intentions, you know, you're doing what you want to do, you've already succeeded. If you're doing even at all on your own terms what you want to do, that is success. Because there's no, I don't know, even in comic books, you know, even in comedy, like the people who I know who are my favorite comic book writers are just like, and I don't have health insurance, you know. And the people who I know who are, you know, great comedians, like, I know people that like were Starbucks baristas at the same time as they had a Comedy Central half hour coming out. So, you know, it's the reality of what it is. So, like, success is what you do on your terms. And Some people stick with, like, Janelle James is a great example of that. Like, she's been doing everything on her own terms since the beginning. Like, she headlined Beast Village in 2018, and she had built, like, easily, like, the amount of money that we put towards ads was great, but our budget was very limited, and she still, like, sold, like, I hesitate to use the term sold out, because we were still just like, if you will fit in this space, please come in. But easily, like, wall to wall, And now she's got Abbott Elementary and, like, has
great show.
Since then, like, Just for Laughs, like, got repped, like, but even then, she was already famous.
Right.
Like, if you knew comedy, you knew who Janelle James was. And so you just, I think that's the lesson there, is if you do what you want to do on your own terms, and you're very dedicated to it, and you tell the universe, this is the hill I'm going to die on, and I'm going to keep doing this, so either, you know, just let me have the success that I'm earning, and you will.
So this is the part of the show called This or That, where we ask our guests some lightning round style questions where you got to figure it out, and we're going to unpack and then maybe talk a little bit about the choices that you made or didn't make. So we're going to get this round of This or That started. That guy, Rye, what you got?
I'm gonna throw you a softball for the first one. We're going to go comic book shows, graphic comic book shows. Invincible or The Boys?
Invincible.
Okay, elaborate.
Yeah. I think what I like about it is I think it's less focused. There's something about Mark Miller Boys is Garth Ennis. Derek Garth.
Yes.
Okay. There's occasions where Garth Ennis and Mark Miller both go so dark with some things.
Right.
That I have a little difficulty handling it,
mm-hmm.
But there's always this positive upshot with Otley and Kirkman.
Yeah,
and even though I feel like Invincible is almost like DC Comics on steroids.
Yeah,
and The Boys feels like DC Comics on like
heroin.
Yeah.
Oh, the accuracy, Doug.
It really is, though. Oh, like, I was just like, what's the most depressing drug you could do? Oh, no, Ryan got to it first.
Yeah, sorry.
You're right there, because it is really just like, there's a lot of points in The Boys where it's just like,
God damn.
Oof. Like, especially in comics, too. Like the original Kick-Ass, like, I remember the comic, I put it down, and I was like, I don't think I can read any more of this after Big Daddy gets killed. I was just like,
okay.
I think I'm done with this.
Yeah. Mm.
Because it was the John Romita, like, the pencils for it. I was just like, that's too dark. This isn't for me anymore.
Oh, it's heavy.
Like, yeah, that scene is heavy. I'm done. I'm out.
You know, it's interesting. There is a certain generation of writer that tends to revel in that cynicism and that dark stuff. And actually, that kind of turned me off from reading The Boys.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoy the Amazon series.
Yeah.
That thing bangs.
Yeah.
But that's also because they tightened up all of the stuff that doesn't work.
It's true.
And they've shifted the story in a different direction because of the paradigm that we live in. That all to say, like, I got through, like, the first, like, volume of The Boys, and I was just like, this... I am too depressed reading this. I won't keep going.
Yeah.
You know, like, because it was just like, it just felt like, oh, it's just gross sex stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, it didn't change the tone at all. Like, okay, oh, another superhero with weird sex stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, another superhero with some weird sex stuff.
Yep.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, this one has a giant penis. Cool, some more weird sex stuff. Is this going anywhere?
You need to work through some things here.
No, nope, just more weird sex stuff?
All
right, buddy.
All right, good answer. All right. I'm with it.
Dana.
Let me see here. What's a better summer? Is it a DC summer with blockbusters, or is it a Marvel summer with blockbusters?
That's really... Okay, if the definition is successful blockbusters... that truly hit, like the way that character is supposed to hit in comics, if it ends up being accurate, then in my opinion, it's a DC summer.
Hmm.
I don't know that we've had one yet. That's
what it looked like.
My frustration. I want it. I have high hopes, honestly. I have high hopes for Black Adam. I've been pumped about it, mostly because of how excited The Rock is for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm a big JSA fan from the Geoff Johns era, because all it is it does DC really well, which is, like, not cynical, the exact opposite. Sometimes there's dark points, but, like, it's usually bright and hopeful, and there's positivity there. And, you know, even in conflict, mm-hmm. there's a combination of both optimism and representation, and there's also, like, really cool, very specific powers, which is the same reason that I like My Hero Academia.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, you have to work together as a team. Not everybody's an absolute tank that can do it all by themselves.
Yeah.
I like Thor, but like, if you don't have any, like, if you can one-shot these people on your own, why do you need Hawkeye?
Yeah.
Like,
this is ridiculous. Right. Yeah.
But like, you know, you've got a couple, like DC, you've got a couple of tanks, but there's definitely ways you can easily take Superman and Martian Manhunter down, at where you have to actually do some Final Fantasy Tactics advanced junk with like Oliver and Arthur and Barry and like other people who have very specific, very, you know, like,
yeah.
And there's people who are just like only have defeated the entire Justice League only by being very smart. And it's like, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see like goofy Jesse Eisenberg Lex Luthor anymore. I want to see like
so much potential.
Give me
bullshit.
I said this in the Henchman thread. Give me Mahershala Ali as Lex Luthor.
And yo, just, like, this I didn't even know I needed that.
Tented fingers, like just has already has it. Is like 19 chess moves ahead of everybody. That's the villain. That
that's always
see.
Been my favorite Lex as well, as the one who's just playing a grand game of chess against Superman and is like,
the Justice League cartoon?
I will manipulate your friend Batman as well because I'm just that guy.
You know it.
That's so good.
All right,
so
DC
good.
Summer.
DC Summer. If we ever see one.
Right.
My this or that. Will Smith or Chris Rock.
Oh wow, that's really man. If I have to come with a this or that, I'm gonna have to say Chris Rock. However, I want to go ahead and elaborate here that I don't think there's that just like a situation there's. There's a lot of situations that are happening right now between, like, NATO v. Russia or Chris Rock v. Will Smith or Democrats v. Republicans or what have you, where there are no actual good guys.
Facts. Mm-hmm.
In a lot of these situations. And there are people who are unable to see the nuance in it, and they're asking for a strict dichotomy to take sides like a team sport. People do that with Marvel v. DC as well. They do that with a lot of things, and that's just not what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jay Whitecotton wrote something that I thought was really good, and what he said was, like, just the one bone mo, the thing that I shared was, maybe the monetization of entertainment and turning it into a meat grinder for the human soul is a bad thing for everybody. Like, Will Smith spending his entire life in the spotlight in every single way, and now going through having aspects of his own relationship, private issues there, made very public in ways that are embarrassing and difficult for him. And I think there's a lot more going on there. Mm. And that's a person that's hurting and deserves compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, obviously Chris knows him from way back as well. And I think that he recognized that. And I think that that's part of the reason why he was just like, all right, Will Smith just slapped the shit out of me. I'm going to make a joke and move on. And that, as a comedian, not because it was like he even said, he was like, it was a G.I. Jane joke. It was a dumb, terrible throwaway joke that he didn't need to make, but it wasn't intended to wound.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant to harm anybody. And like the ultimate thing that you can do in a situation like that where you have something go very awry, and like I've had things go very awry. There was a Halloween where a dude passed out from like a tooth infection at the funny bone, and he had to get dragged out by an ambulance, and I was wearing a Green Lantern costume, and I had to go back up and get the audience back, like doing 10 minutes after this dude like got his life saved. So like, look,
my lord,
situations like that
in a Green Lantern costume.
That's truly heroic right there.
People could see the bulge. It was really wild. So like, so Chris just recovering from that and moving along, great. Real weird that everybody was like, we are going to give a standing ovation to this guy, you know, right after 15 minutes after he punched somebody in the face or slapped somebody in the face. Weird, but also, what else do you do?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, that's we're programmed that you just go along with the show, right? Like, yeah. I guess if nothing's going to happen, I guess we just keep doing the show like we're going to do the show. Oh, we won the award. We're supposed to do the thing. Right. We get up and we stand up and we do the thing. Yeah, you kind of go on autopilot, which I think also then like leaves that room for obviously tons of speculation and criticism. But like, when you're just reacting, like, what is the right call? Because you're in the moment. You're literally on live television, and you've got to put a show on. Just a slight, not segue, a little sidebar. Like, in my nerddom, you know, when Owen Hart died, you know, he tragically fell from the rafters
right
into the ring and broke his neck and died there on the spot.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, like, so... With a clear head, you know this is a crime scene. Everything should have stopped. They needed to investigate. But you're in the middle of a live show that is being broadcast. Yes. What do entertainers know what to do? They just got out there and kept wrestling. They wrestled around this man's blood stain where he had just died. Where there was still an indention from where he had fallen because he had broken the ring.
Yeah.
Like where that impact had happened.
Yeah.
And like... Of course, in retrospect, you can go, yeah, this is where you fucked up.
Right.
Like, here. But, like, in that moment, what do you do? What are you supposed to do? I don't know. This is unprecedented.
I mean, literally, the thing they say is, like, the show must go on.
Right, exactly. Which is that toxic thing that we've all been trained as performers. Is like, you get your ass up there and you put it on the stage.
Yeah.
Yep. Facts.
One way or another, you got to get out there and entertain the people because, like, that's what you've promised, and you have to deliver on those promises.
Facts.
So yeah, there is that space of like, is there really a right answer? No, you got to figure out how to move through it and deal with the thing on the other side as you come out, so not to just like totally steal your thunder and take your answer. But
no,
like,
I think we're on the same page here.
It's a fascinating thing to unpack.
There isn't a deeper meaning of any of it. It's. You know, it's a really complex situation that doesn't necessarily say anything about our culture. It says everything and nothing at the same time. It's just what it is.
That's actually the best take I think I've heard on this entire thing in the last week, as obviously it's all over the interwebs. Right. Everybody's talking about it. They can't seem to stop talking about it. I thought we'd actually accomplished something really special, that we had, like, killed this topic in one day. Mm-hmm. So I thought by Monday night... I was like, oh, you're already just repeating the same memes and making literally the same joke. You've already jumped the shark with this. Fantastic. We can move on. Yeah. I was thinking by Tuesday morning, we'll have something new to do.
Nope.
And there are some folks who just, like, kicking and screaming, holding on to it. And I think you've done the best take. It says everything and nothing all at the same time. And that's exactly it. Because as people have been writing think pieces and all this kind of stuff, which is also just fucking bizarre.
Oh, my God. Protect him, protect her, protect each other.
What about
these motherfuckers with all this money, and you are sitting in front of a TV for just a valid piece of moment to be like, oh, look what happened. Well, this and this, this and this, this, this.
Or
this.
Is it real? Is it staged? I swear black folks like think everything's a fucking conspiracy sometimes.
It's the roulette. Where's Oprah?
Yeah, is that
I can't blame anybody. I can't blame anybody for thinking about that, because there's also, like, it could be, but also...
Fake news.
Like, a bunch of comedians were having this discussion on Tuesday where we're just like, what was the CIA or whoever trying to distract people from?
Right.
The fact that a piece of ice the size of the city of Rome fell off of Antarctica, the war in Ukraine, the rising fuel prices, the fact that the Biden administration just took away... funding for COVID testing, the fact that they're opening up millions of barrels of oil, but they're not doing any kind of green initiative. Like, there's so many things. What are they trying to distract you from? Not everything, but they succeeded in doing that.
Yeah. Exactly. At least got you to stop thinking about it for a week now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, heat off of us for a week. Like, you just need a little breathing room. I got tickets to fucking Hamilton.
gotta move this money around and pay these bills. If y'all just turn around.
Just don't look this way.
All right. Well, that was fun. Now, normally this would be where we do our "Don't Get Me Started" rant.
Yeah.
Dan here, one of my fellow henchmen, gives a solid rant. So I'm actually going to pass the baton this month to our guest here. So by all means, take the reins. What has you upset to where you can say, "Don't get me started"?
Oh boy. Okay. Gentlemen, and this is going to be the subject of the Doomcast this week, but I have seen Morbius so that you do not have to.
Thank you.
Okay.
I played an April Fool's prank where I told everybody that it was actually a good movie and that it's better than what a lot of people are reviewing it to be. And in fact, after having seen it Friday, I can tell you that it is not a Plan 9 from Outer Space absolute fiasco of like a goofball, like it's so bad it's actually a good movie. It's just not good. It isn't explicitly bad, but it is like somebody wrote and directed and produced a comic book film from 1995, but then put CGI from a PlayStation 3 over different portions of it.
Damn.
There's a lot
not
going on.
Not the PS3! The reason
I'm so mad about the reason I'm mad about this is because I don't understand why Sony keeps making like the broad problem that I have with this is the monetization of every single comic book property.
Yeah.
And the creation, taking art essentially and turning it into just content, that drives me absolutely nuts. But this is like key because it's just a movie Sony made in order to get a paycheck for like Jared Leto, and also to make sure they maintain the rights to their Spider-Man adjacent characters. They didn't care how it was going to come out. And I really like Morbius because in the comics, it's a very compelling character. This is somebody who's driven to like use medical science in order to try and like just cure themselves and a spouse, and ends up a very tragic character in general, and is kind of an anti-hero in a lot of ways, and can be done really well. And this just wasn't it at all. There were like... There's like 5 minutes where there's only four characters in the movie, and almost all of them are dying in succession in a 5 minute period. The last fight was just an absolute mess, and it literally did look like a cutscene from like Legacy of Kain: Soul Reaver.
Damn!
Like, I don't know what was going on, like, which that was a good game, but like, let's admit the graphics don't hold up.
Yo, the accuracy. Yo, the accuracy though.
Anyway.
Damn.
I'm disappointed. I've never seen a boot like Jared Leto is the absolute kiss of death.
Yeah.
Who lets this man keep acting?
No, I don't know.
That's the thing. I am confused. I get it. He won the Oscar, and that's like the golden ticket. I get it. And did he crush Dallas Buyers Club? Yeah, he was pretty good. I saw it.
He peaked with Requiem.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, who lets him keep showing up to things, and they're like, yeah, let's get Jared. Let's see what he's doing. Let's tank this movie. I think we got something pretty good.
How can we make this turd?
Can I lower this to a
Jared
D?
Leto.
30 Seconds to Mars.
Bam.
More like 30 Seconds to Meh.
Ah, hey. Seriously. Hey.
Roasted.
That's why you get paid the big bucks, my guy.
There you go.
We're gonna close this episode, of course, with a quick round of the top three. Mm-hmm. For all of our listeners, you can catch the top three on Spotify. Okay. Of course, it is a cumulative playlist that each of our guests in each episode, the list gets bigger and bigger and bigger for the year. So you can rock to the songs that we are obsessed with. So of course, I gotta start this off. My first pick for the top three is Big Pimpin' by Jay-Z. For a couple reasons. Moon Knight just debuted.
Did.
And with our guest, I felt it was appropriate to reference that. It's a dope show.
Right.
But also they slipped that in there, and I was like, yo, we back.
Right under the radar.
Yeah, and I was like,
right under the radar.
All right, Big Pimpin'.
Right.
And also, you know, like, I used to listen to Jay-Z back like on the Walkman, like back.
Yeah.
And your boy here, like, you used to like be like, yo, Jay-Z, that's your guy, right? And I was like, you know, we young, so I didn't really know. So, you know, like when I picked up Big Pimpin' for real, what was that, Volume 3? Was a big moment.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we've been rocking with the GOAT for a while. So you know, on our relationship too, I had to go ahead and throw Jay-Z in the list.
I respect it.
Big Pimpin', Jay-Z, so that's number one.
All right, for me, shout out to my kids because I end up watching all this shit, and some of these kids' soundtracks bang, like, wow. So for this one, I got to give to one of the American Idol contestants, Michael J. Woodard. He's the voice of Arlo the Alligator Boy on Netflix. Check that shit out. He has a song called Wash the Hurt Away. It's about this little alligator boy who basically gets abandoned by his parents, sent to live down in the swamp, goes to find his dad when he's like 15. Dad's like this rich dude in New York who's like, nah, bruh, I can't do it. And so he has that Will Smith, Why Don't He Want Me, Man?
Oh, man.
Song called Wash the Hurt Away. And that shit bangs. So put that one on there.
All right, well, you know, I'm in vacation mode and it's the season and celebration. So first song for me, I got to give it up to OG Sister Nancy with Bomb Bomb.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
If you know me, you know that probably one of my favorite movies is Belly.
Right.
And that scene particularly was like one of the scenes that I never, ever, ever, ever get over. Just to see that simple part, to hear the music, to watch the dark movement of Hype Williams' videography moving through that shit. I don't know.
That's a beautiful film.
And from being a kid, like, you know, like a young teenager watching that movie and being like, that song, where the fuck did they find that song? Where did the song come from? And then, like, years and years later, they keep bringing it up, or it keeps bringing the resurgence, or resurgence comes back. And then she wasn't receiving her, like, royalties or anything due for that music.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Jay-Z came up with 444 just to kind of bring in Jay-Z a bit. And he went back and used some of her music. And in using her music, he contacted her and was like, let's get all your shit back. And basically got her back into the limelight, got everything in position again.
Okay.
And got her back to receiving her royalties. And I was scrolling through Facebook one day, and I see this video where these guys are doing like the pandemic videos, and it's like her singing the song years later.
Mm. Okay.
And she sounds the same. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is where I'm learning all my patois from here on out. So gotta give it to Sister Nancy, one of my favorites.
Love it.
What you got, Dan?
So the first song I'm gonna go with is this just came out yesterday, but it's from one of my favorite bands of definitely now of all time, Pup. It's the second track on The Unraveling of Pup the Band. Totally Fine is the name of the song, and it's a band that consistently keeps pushing the kind of limits of like a post-hardcore punk, pop punk fusion in a lot of different ways. And every single album is like has gone from like lo-fi to a little bit more produced. And this is suddenly almost like this album almost feels like, especially this track, comes from the first track, which is just a piano, to suddenly like a sweeping orchestral, and then like this very produced fusion of pop punk in a way that I'm like, after just listening to it a couple times, I'm like, are they the Beatles of punk now? Is that what has happened?
Looking forward to that.
I don't know what's happened here.
You know, that's a spot that, like, you know, when you're kind of defining what you're doing, like, that's the space where it's like, yeah, what hasn't been done? Yep. There has not been a Beatles of the punk scene. Someone needs to go ahead and get that crown if it exists.
Yeah.
So my next song, to piggyback on your vacation energy.
Yeah.
We were going back and forth.
Let's go.
Shout out to my girl, Belinda Carlisle. Okay. Vacation by the Go-Go's.
Hey. Okay.
Vacation, all I ever wanted.
Vacation. Had to
get away. That's right. We're checking out. We're ready to go. And that song is a banger. Like, also, Belinda Carlisle, totally a banger. Like,
hey to speak facts.
Yo, straight MILF energy, man.
I ain't mad at that. All right. Well, as we were talking about before the show, I just got a promotion at the job, new gig. So I'm kind of feeling myself.
Congratulations. Thank you. Promotions.
So I'm gonna go with Clips featuring the problematic GOAT, Kanye West, kind of like a big deal.
Yeah. Hey. So, okay.
Yeah.
That's the Kanye V. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're going to go with Clips and Kanye, kind of like a big deal.
Okay.
My man.
I like it. Well, I'm going to stay in the 80s mode and still stick with the season, and I got to give it to Stevie B with Spring Love.
Okay.
This song hits on a whole bunch of different levels for me. First off, I'll give it to the Kid Merrill from Jesus and Merrill because it's one of his AKA names is the East Tremont Stevie B, all his greatest hits. And this song starts playing in the background in the music, and I'm like, yo, this reminds me of being out on Friday night at Skatey's from 9 to fucking midnight or 1 in the morning every Friday.
All those fucking skating
parties. All
the
old 80s skating rink songs that they only play there. You never hear them anywhere else.
Never.
But you only hear them there. And so that was one of the songs. I, you know, you see one of the girls grind my spring love. Come back to me.
You're like, hey, wait a minute.
Let me catch up.
Baby girl, what size you wear? What size you wear? I'll catch you next time you come through.
So yeah, had to roll with Stevie B on that one.
Love it.
I'll just stay here. You just roll. Yeah, you go come back around.
Yeah,
you be back around. You go come back around.
All right, it's on you, Dan.
So the second one that I'm recently obsessed with is it's the opening track from an anime called Ranking of Kings, which is
anime over his really, bang though.
Literally, literally.
Oh, you gotta get you gotta get into this because it's like if it's like if Quentin Tarantino or Kentaro Miura, the guy that did Berserk. Made a Ghibli movie. It's kind of like the animation is like a cross between like Don Bluth and Studio Ghibli, and it's like very cute animation. But it's about this kid whose dad is a giant, like a superpowered giant, and is king of this country, and makes a deal with the devil to sap all of his son's power and give it to him so he can be immortal. And so this kid is born with he's super tiny even for a giant. And he never grows to anything else, but he can dodge like a motherfucker, like better than anybody else. Nobody can hit him, nobody can touch him. But then he eventually learns how to tag people's weak spot and take people down in one hit, even though he has no actual strength. You just find the right place. So the track is by a Japanese kind of pop funk band called King Gnu, and the track is Boy, and it's just if you listen, we're putting this in a playlist. When you listen to it. It is very catchy. It's initially very discordant, and you you get into it, and you're just all right, there's a lot going on here, and there's they're taking stuff from Hall & Oates and Stevie Wonder as the same time as they've got this very soulful harmonized sound their voices.
I'm so
it's
ready.
Really, really, really interesting, and it's a really good track that you've got in your head, even though it's this really dark ultimately very violent anime, the track is just makes it feels like spring and summer in a very good way.
Yo, there's always that disconnect, right? Where you're this theme song is okay, and then it's and the show's about demons and cannibalism suicide. You're wait.
Okay.
No,
this makes sense.
Why were the dancing schoolgirls at the beginning? I don't know how these connect.
Schoolgirls.
And it's by the season finale, you'll understand. You go,
okay.
Got it. So my last song for this episode is The Thong Song by Sisqó. That song is pure pop chaos.
I don't think you heard.
My man's wrote one verse.
Said I like the way.
And nothing else. And they said, do you have any other...
I'll sing it again.
Yeah, do you have any other lyrics? He said, no, I'm going to sing it again. And they were like, all right, cool, we're at the bridge. You got anything else? He said, I'm going to change the key. We're going to modulate because I wrote nothing else. And I just love that. I love that chaos. I love the fact that such a thing even exists just because this man likes to look at booties. That's so perfectly 1999.
Every IG model right now should thank Sisqó for having a career.
He built an entire industry.
About 8th grade and being in middle school and hearing that song for the first time.
Bro, it was a game changer.
Yeah.
It was a game changer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The thong song.
The thong song.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, for my third one, so I finished season 2 of Euphoria. Zendaya is going to go down as one of the GOATs, top 5 all time. Her future is ridiculous.
Big facts.
And if you're on the kids and on the TikTok, they have the song Forever, which is actually from the Euphoria score. And that's what I'm putting on here because that shit has been living in my head rent free for a week. I probably listened to that song 15 times yesterday. And it really has no real lyrics. It's just this really ephemeral, gorgeous score. And again, it's just been beaten in my head. So Forever off of the Euphoria score. That shit slaps. Enjoy.
My man.
Man.
Yeah, no pressure. No pressure these last.
Not even pressure. This will clearly state what's going on in the thing that's right about now is last one for me is going to be called from Grind Mode. It's called I'm So High.
Go ahead and flex. Do it. Come on.
I mean, it's just that song, period, from that time, that era. And then, Rocky Mountains and trying to be there between the clouds, 30,000 feet.
Are we going to Pikes Peak?
You know,
I don't want to drive down Pikes Peak.
No, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Ain't worth it.
But you know, to be up there,
yeah,
so high.
I'm ready. A week from now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds like fun.
Dan, close this out
before you go. Check your brakes. Definitely check your brakes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last one that I listen to periodically, I've been listening to since last June, and it's the first, like, David Bory has a bit about how you have to listen to rap in the first person,
mm-hmm.
like you have to it has to be you speaking instead of you imagining what somebody else is saying to you. They're not, it's you experiencing that, and one of like the first orchestral or like score songs that I've heard where I'm like, no, this is 100% the first person, is the Green Theme from Loki by Natalie Holt, where it's just like, bum, 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 doo, like the strings, it makes, it's like, you're driving in your car, like you're going to go to like a job interview, you're like, I'm going to kick that door down, and I'm going to take this place over, and I'm going to demand that I'm going to be made CEO, and I'm going to wear a crown.
Give me 50 million.
With horns on it. Like, you're just like, no.
This is a mailroom position?
I don't care.
I'm a CEO now.
The mail will be delivered upon their arrival. When I say it.
You're just like pull like a knife out of like a pocket dimension. You're like, hold it to the throat. You're like, no, you don't understand.
I will be calling security.
I have security.
So that concludes this episode of Strictly For My Neighbors. But before we go, of course, we can plug the things one more time for our guest Dan Umthin. Where can we follow you? What do you have coming up?
Check out the Doomcast. That's every week, every Wednesday. I'm going to be doing some really silly stuff here upcoming. There might be another MODOK. There might be
another toy commercial. Fuck yes!
Oh, yes.
Fuck yes, MODOK!
Big fan. Big fan.
It's how I got swept in.
It's so silly.
But it's so good. It's like, oh, shit. What is he doing? Just like, oh.
I just have a weird dream.
Where's his body? He's cooking. He's chopping shit. There's nothing there.
Shout out Dan's wife.
She's so patient with it. She's so patient with it. I cut so much of her just being like, I'm not doing this anymore. she was super patient. Regular every Tuesday over at Lefty's, starting at 8, there's a stand-up open mic. And I'm thinking of every first Wednesday of the month, so April the 6th, obviously, that's Peachtree Des Moines branch, Peachtree Comedy Night out there. There's never a cover charge. It's always a lot of fun, and we always have a very good lineup. So come out to those. Absolutely.
Shout out to Peachtree because their root beer is fucking fire.
It really is.
I've been
is.
Waiting to say that too, but their root beer is the shit.
Good to know.
Peachtree, if you want to go ahead and send your boy some root beer, go ahead and slide in those
DMs. For real, because I love that shit.
Any socials, anything we can follow you guys on?
Go ahead. I mean, you know, Dan will be Picasso on all platforms, you know, find me or don't. I'm cool on either, but you know I'm around.
Fair. You can follow me on Twitters where I talk the most shit, even though right now it's basically a Boston Celtics fan account. That's @thatguy_Rye.
Hey,
my man.
Trying to get back into this whole like daily art thing. So, you know, I'll also throw out the Instagram @thatguy_Rye_IG.
Trying to get,
you know, back in the swing of things. Before I toss it to you, I do just want to give a quick shout out from our fellow henchman, TJ, aka Tristan, who had a lot of love for you. And the show in general for Singing in the Rain.
Yeah!
So make sure you go ahead and give that plug. Just wanted to make sure we put that out there. Go support your boy. And by all means, Madison Ray.
Yo! Yeah. This Singing in the Rain thing has been a good run. Doing five shows a week.
Yeah.
You know, doing the thing, putting it down. But also, you love to see your own people come out and support. And, you know, I'm glad that folks are coming out and having a good time. Make it a date night. You know, get some tickets. Go check it out. Check out the show. Facts. See some tap dancing. We actually make it rain on stage. Like, real water effects.
Yeah.
Like you might get wet.
All right, don't sit in the front row and don't wear suede shoes.
I'm saying.
Wow.
But, you know, we're putting it down here in Des Moines. Like, we're making great art. And, you know, if you want to follow me, you can find me at at Emperor Madison Ray on IG. Of course, you always just check out the website, www.thefinessemusic.com, and you can check out all those new bangers that we're coming out with. And of course, support that first video, Let's Pretend, you know. Over 100,000 views on the YouTube, you know? So we out here doing things, and I appreciate everybody who's, you know, giving it a listen, giving it a share, and all those things. You know, it does take a village. And so, once again, thanks, Dan, for joining us for this episode of Strictly For My Neighbors. You know what to do. Give it a share. Give it a like. Hit your boys up. And also, Peace3, send us some root beer. Your boys are thirsty. We'll catch you next time.
Same black time.
Same black channel. Woo. Peace. We out.